Hosanna, a fellowship of Christians.
Good morning, everyone. Okay, now after we've witnessed this beautiful ceremony and bless the children, bless the parents, I've got a question for all of you. And I feel free to raise your hand if you can answer the question. Can any of you here tell us what these children's lives are going to look like in the future? No. Anyone here know what the world that they're going to live in is going to look like? Maybe 80 or more years into their life expectancy? Because this generation's going to probably live even longer than we do. Anybody know what the world's going to be like? Wow, is there anyone here who knows whether these children are going to grow up to be rocket scientists or rock stars? Marine biologists or makeup artists? I know, the pictures were good. Tour guides or teachers? Or any other vocation or occupation? We don't know what the world's going to look like. We don't know what they're going to be like. We don't even know what they're going to be doing. But see, right away, we could start to get a little anxiety about that. But yet, it's part of the wonder. It is part of the wonder and sometimes, yes, part of the worry of being a parent. There are things we can't know there are things we can know with some certainty. We kind of know how they're going to develop. They're going to grow. They're going to need new clothes a lot. Certainly, we know these things. But there's so much more we simply cannot know. And how we respond to that reality is what makes all the difference. There's an old Chinese fable that speaks to this tension. It's about a parent who responded to every changing circumstance in his own life and his child's life as if they were blessings in disguise.
So let's tell you that story. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, oh, sorry, wrong story. A long time ago, there was a gentle old man who lived near the Great Wall of China. He had only two passions in his life, horses and his son, whom he loved more than anything else in the world. The old man and his son would ride their horses every day. They enjoyed the good fortune that life had seemingly bestowed upon them.
Well, one morning, the stable door was left open, and one of the old man's favorite horses escaped. When the neighbors heard the news, they came over to comfort the old man. They told him that they were sorry that he had had such bad luck.
But strangely enough, the old man explained to his neighbors that losing his horse wasn't necessarily bad luck. There was no way to predict that the horse would escape. It just happened, and there was nothing now that could be done about it. There's no reason to be upset, said the old man.
Mm-hmm. Well, a week later, the horse came back and brought a rare and valuable mare with him. When the neighbors heard of the old man's good luck, they quickly came over to congratulate him. But again, the old man was not excited. He simply repeated what he'd said before. It was not necessarily good luck that brought him this new and beautiful horse. It just happened. And there was no reason to get excited over it. The neighbors went home a bit puzzled.
A short time later, while the son was riding the new horse, she slipped and fell. She landed on the son's leg and broke it, and he would always walk with a limp. Mm-hmm. Again, the neighbors came to the old man's house to give their sympathy for the bad luck that had befallen his son. You know where this is going by now, don't you? He explained to the neighbors that they should not feel sorrow for his son nor anger toward the mare. It was purely an accident that could not be predicted, and there was nothing he or she or they could do to change it. At this point, the neighbors thought that the old man was crazy, and they decided to leave him alone.
2 years later, an enemy invaded their country, and the sons of the old man's neighbors were drafted to defend the country against the attack. Because the old man's son was disabled, he could not engage in the fighting. The war was long and terrible, and most of the old man's neighbors and sons were killed. But his son lived because he'd been hurt in the riding accident 2 years earlier.
And on and on and on it can go in his story and in ours. See, this old wise father had learned to trust that no matter what his circumstances looked like, there was something good outworking through it all. Mm-hmm. that somehow in ways he couldn't understand in any given moment, everything that happened was, or at least could be, a blessing in disguise. He lived in that gift of paradox we've been exploring all month, for those of you who've been here for other messages in this month of December. Paradox is that expression of a mature faith. It's holding together two things at once that seem on the surface to be somewhat contradictory. But in the grace and wisdom of God, particularly when we live into a mature faith, we find that they are not always opposed to one another. We look so far this month at the paradoxes of life and death, and of yes and no, and of peace and conflict. And today we're looking at the paradox of knowing and unknowing.
Well, the paradoxical old story that we just told you sounds a lot like the paradoxical biblical story that we've been exploring over these weeks of Advent. The story of how our invisible, immortal, invulnerable God became visible and mortal and very vulnerable. How God was born as a helpless baby through an ordinary young woman named Mary, who was betrothed to her beloved Joseph, and was looking forward to living the dream of raising a family that she shared with most or all of the other young girls in her culture. Everyone around her said, "This is very good that you be married to Joseph." But Mary held it with open hands.
And then one day, you know this story, an angel showed up with a message. "Mary, you're going to get pregnant even though you're not married." And that looked like a bad thing, especially to her fiancé, Joseph. Mm-hmm. But Mary instead sang a song of rejoicing and held it with open hands.
Then another angel showed up to assure Joseph that Mary was telling the truth and that he had been chosen to take care of her and take care of the child. Joseph said yes, and that looked like a good thing, especially to Mary. And yet still, she held it with open hands.
And then the Roman emperor made a law that required them to leave their home and travel on uncomfortable donkeys a very long distance at precisely the time she was due to give birth. Mm-hmm. And that, all the women in the room can groan together, looked like a very bad thing. But Mary held it with open hands.
Well, then they arrived in Bethlehem. With Mary's labor intensifying, they couldn't find any available room anywhere in town. So despite all the obstacles of delivering a baby among livestock, Jesus was born. And angels rejoiced, and shepherds and wise ones from afar visited. And that seemed a very, very good thing. Still, Mary held her baby and all of it with open hands.
Which was good, because then the king of Israel decided to kill her baby and any other baby that was in the way. And Mary and Joseph had to pack up and hurriedly flee to a foreign country to protect their child. And that all looked for all the world like a very bad thing. But Mary once again held it with open hands.
And then, years later, Joseph was told in another dream that it was safe to return home with Jesus and raise a family which seemed little different from the families that would be around them. And finally, Mary was given the opportunity to live a life that looked like that dream of young girls in her culture. And many said, "This is good." But Mary was learning. She was learning through all of this to always hold life, all of life, with open hands.
You see, Mary knew some things for certain by now, but the more she had learned, you guys know what this feels like, the more she knew what she didn't know.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book.
Don't know much. Thing is, I remember this on the radio.
You. I was going to have you all sing in. Don't know this, don't know that, but I do know this.
They Mary played it on American Bandstand. That's why I know that. Anyway. Sorry.
I've heard of that show. That was in... Anyway. You know much more about history
I learned
than
how
I do.
To do that. I learned how to twist with Chubby Checker from that. But I digress.
Some of us read about history in the books, and some of us have experience.
No. Yes. I'll own that.
Anyway, back to Mary. Mary didn't know exactly how God was going to fulfill this ancient promise of redemption. But she did know that God was in the process of doing it, mm-hmm. right? She didn't know what God's actions would look like moving forward. But she did know that God always acts in justice and mercy. Yeah. The further she moved in her story, the less she actually knew about what was going on. But the more convinced she was that in all things, God would work together for the good.
Yeah.
So she kept her hands and her heart and her mind and her spirit open. And by the way, she's often pictured that way in statues or other images of Mary. She's offering us an example to follow, not only when we know, but especially when we don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you some examples in the first two chapters of the Gospel of Luke where we find this Christmas story of examples of Mary's knowing and unknowing. When the angel announced that Mary would be the mother of Messiah, she thought she knew what a Messiah would be.
Mm-hmm.
She had been taught that the Messiah would be a political ruler who would free her people from oppression. And that's what her song of rejoicing is mostly about. But when the shepherds came to visit her the night of Jesus' birth, their story expanded her understanding a little bit. She had to unlearn, unknow some of what she had been taught in order to be able to hear their story about what the angels sang, a Messiah who was for everyone, not just her people, and who would bring peace,
mm-hmm.
peace on earth, goodwill to men, not just a violent revolution.
Yeah.
And then, a few days later, she and Joseph took baby Jesus to the temple, and they met an old man, Simeon, who told Mary that because of Jesus, she would someday feel like a sword had pierced her own soul.
Yep.
What did that all mean? You got to imagine that she's wondering, how is this all going to be different than what I had expected at the beginning?
Yeah.
Think about it. We know more of the meaning of the Christmas story than Mary did while she was living it.
That's right. Yep. Yep. So the old man in the first story that we told you was able to be incredibly wise because he'd lived a long time. And he had learned firsthand that what's most real and what's most true is not dependent on ever-changing circumstances and situations. He knew, that old man, that the seasons of joy and sorrow, loss and gain, come into everyone's life. It's like a big, you know, wheel that's turning like the seasons. We're in winter now. I wish this one would turn really quickly, but it's here, right? And these seasons, they come into everyone's life. Some of these seasons come as a result of our own choices. But you know what? As much or more, these seasons come from circumstances that are beyond our control. So this old man became very wise in discerning what he could control and what he couldn't control. He became very wise in discerning what he could know for certain and what he couldn't. And that wisdom allowed him to stand without anxiety in any circumstance. He didn't feel the need to judge circumstances, situations, seasons as either good or bad. See, rather, through it all, he trusted that somehow, in ways he couldn't see or control, in any given moment, all things were somehow mysteriously working together for a greater good. And as Tony was just pointing out, although she was young, Mary learned wisdom in real life, much in the same way as that fictional old man did in the fable. See, when Angel Gabriel showed up, she didn't react, which is what most of us do when we're surprised by something. We say good, bad, and we react, bang. She didn't react quickly out of intense emotion. And as the story unfolded, she didn't make decisions based on how circumstances looked on the surface, on appearance level. Instead, what we're told in Scripture, what Mary did was she stored it all up. She watched, she observed, she stored all of this up in her heart, and she pondered. In other words, she wasn't reactive, she was responsive. A thoughtful, prayerful responding allows us to live life, especially the parts that we can't control, especially what we can't know, in a much different way. See, of course, she was human. It's not like, you know, she's beyond feeling what all the rest of us would feel. No, she was human. She experienced what anyone in her situation would experience. The difference was her response. She did not judge things she couldn't understand. But she continued to trust in the guidance of the only one who knew everything. So Mary grew in wisdom over time. So much so that decades later, even as she wept, utterly heartbroken and powerless at the foot of the cross on which her son was being crucified, she did not shake her fist at God demanding an explanation. No, she simply kept doing what she'd already been doing. She kept reaching out open hands, trusting that somehow mysteriously God was at work, that somehow in ways she couldn't fathom, God was still there and was able to bring greater goodness in life from even that inconceivable suffering.
The old Chinese man had grown in wisdom. Mary grew in wisdom. Even Jesus grew in wisdom. The second chapter of the book of Luke, which ends kind of, ends this whole Christmas story, ends with one of the remarkable verses, and the most remarkable verses in the New Testament. It says, Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and all the people. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a moment. This God becoming human thing was not play acting. It wasn't dress up. It was the real deal. Jesus came as a baby, and as a baby, he had to learn. He had to grow. He had to grow up. He didn't start out just knowing everything that his father did. He wasn't born fully mature. He didn't begin with perfect wisdom. Mm-hmm. He wasn't Baby Yoda. We'll pause for a moment, allow you to appreciate that.
I know.
What I loved about this picture is that Jesus has something to teach little Baby Yoda. And even the grown-up version. Jesus was a baby very much like these cute ones who were here on the platform just a few moments ago. He chose to make that risk and to experience that along with us. And that gives us hope.
Yes.
God thought that the knowing and unknowing process was so important that he thought, he asked Jesus to experience it. And if that's true, then it's important for us. It's important for us to grow up as well. This is what makes us wise. This is what moves us into the mature seasons of faith we've been talking about this month. And it's a beautiful invitation that's for all of us. But, we don't always want to go there. And most Christians, to be honest, don't get there. Why is that? Well, we want answers to our questions. All of them.
Yes.
And if there aren't answers, sometimes we'll just make them up and hold on to those answers aggressively when we think we have them. And of course, some people go around looking for others to condemn for having the wrong answers to questions that maybe don't even matter that much.
Yep.
And as a result, our faith remains small and our trust remains shallow and our perspective remains narrow. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because unlike the old man of the opening story and unlike Mary, we end up clutching onto something instead of being willing to trust and risk living in the unknowing.
Mm-hmm. And why do we clutch? Well, because we're human. Because it's often a knee-jerk reaction, right, to feeling insecure. When we feel out of control, when we feel powerless, we have a tendency to do this. If you think about it, when we lose our balance physically, instinctively there's something in us that just reaches out to grab someone or something that's going to keep us from falling. Do you know the same holds true emotionally and mentally, relationally, even spiritually? When something happens that challenges or contradicts our assumptions about how life is supposed to be, or challenges us, our set traditions or beliefs, or our friendships or family ties or other relationships, or our financial security, or our health, or countless other things that we think we must have in order to be okay. See, that's the thing. We as humans, in the face of what we can't know, can't control, what we want to do is find something. And we do it in our own power, usually. But to grab onto something and hold it tight, thinking that that's going to give us security. What it ends up doing, though, is we end up filling this empty feeling inside, finding stability in something that is passing, something that can't be guaranteed, something we really can't control. So it all becomes a paradox. Literally, what we can do, you know, when these situations come, what it can feel like is literally, it can feel like the ground's moving underneath us, right?
I feel the earth move under my feet. I feel the
Carly
sky
Simon, I'm just grooving out this morning. This proves we have the best music.
I think we're concluding that God likes music from the 60s.
Yeah, I think so. But did you ever have that experience? You know, something happens that's just completely unexpected, and it feels like you're falling, like something opens up inside, right? I think we've all been there. See, the thing is, it's not that any of those things or those people, the situations, even the things that we're trying to grasp onto, it's not good or bad. What at the heart of this, what matters is it's about us being overly dependent on those things or those people in order to have some sense of control in a situation or in all of life that can all too easily seem to swirl out of control. So we're clutching onto something we think is solid in order to maintain our illusion of certainty, because it is an illusion. We do this very human thing. We clutch in order to maintain an illusion of certainty in an uncertain world. We clutch, why? Because we are mortal, vulnerable, needy creatures who prefer to trust what we can see rather than the Creator we cannot see. And yet, you know, when we choose to let go of the need to control everything, when we choose to do what God did, empty ourselves. In order to become human, God, Philippians 2, emptied God's self. That is so mysterious. I mean, theologians for centuries have been trying to decide, what does that mean? But he emptied himself for us to do that same thing, have that same mind be in you, that same attitude be in you that was in Christ Jesus, to empty ourselves of the need to understand everything. See, when we're able to do that, we become free. We become free to live in an entirely different way of knowing. That not only based here, but in the deep knowing. See, a way of knowing that's rooted deeply in the reality that transcends what our human eyes can see or our human minds can understand. Many, many years ago, I was given a prayer experience. Once in a while, this happens. But I was given an experience in prayer that it reframed everything for me. I was in the midst of a situation that literally, I felt like I was dying. I felt like I didn't know what to do, had reached kind of a dead end. And I was praying. And all of a sudden, it was like I'm on the rim of a bottomless pit, holding on by my fingers. And it felt like I'd been there for a long time, and my fingers felt tired, like they were slipping. And I said in the prayer, God, help me. And what the sense was is, let go and trust me. And I said back, I'm afraid to fall, God. That was it. I had my invitation. Let go and trust me. So as the prayer went on, oh my gosh, I knew I wasn't going to be able to hold on and do this myself. So I decided that the only real choice that I had was to trust God. So I let go. And in the dream, it was as if I could feel myself falling down, 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 down into this dark abyss. And I just kept falling, 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 and my hands were clenched, and I was braced the whole time for the impact of when I was going to hit bottom. And then something unexplainable happened, and in a way, I cannot to this day understand it. But suddenly, everything shifted. In one moment, I was falling into dark nothingness, and in the next moment, I was falling into the fullness of everything. It was like everything shifted inside out. One moment, my hands were clenched in fear, and the next, seriously. It was like I'm wide open. My hands are, everything's open in wonder and in joy. And suddenly, in this prayer, I realized that the everything I was falling into was God. God, who is bottomless love and bottomless grace and bottomless mercy and bottomless hope and bottomless forgiveness, and that I would be falling forever. And it was joyful. It wasn't scary. See, so it was like I was also like falling into the God in me, into this paradoxical place where everything comes together. And even now, decades later, you know, as I continue to fall into this ever-deepening love relationship with God, at the same time this is happening inside of me, simultaneously, I'm continuing to grow more and more secure in an uncertain world, more this kind of quiet confidence of there is someplace solid to stand, which makes no sense, right? But it's true. Okay. But the thing is, and I'm growing in so many ways, and continue to grow in so many ways, but the thing is, the growth isn't automatic. See, my part, I've got to continue to notice when I start clutching, you know, onto something other than God. I've got to notice so that I can continue to choose to let go and trust God. I think There's an illustration that someone gave me years ago that I want to give you that is, I think it's helpful. It's simple, but it illustrates. I mean, again, it doesn't, like, you got to, like, stay with it because every illustration breaks down at points. But we didn't practice this.
I have no idea.
As usual, you know, when we do this, it's very spontaneous and you look nervous. Okay, Tony, you're going to represent us humans, and I'm going to represent God.
This seems familiar.
Okay. So, would you put your hand out, please? Okay, you could put both of them.
Oh, okay.
Okay, all right, put your hands out. And, okay, now I've got to remember because this...
You're going to wiggle my hands?
Tony, I'm God, right? And Tony, I would like to give you a gift to help you to grow. I want you to grow in love, in freedom, in wisdom. And so I'm going to give you a gift.
Is it candy?
Well, I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to say I'm going to give you a gift, okay? And you like that gift.
You like it a lot.
You say, that's a good gift. And some time goes by, and you're learning, and you're growing from that gift. And the time comes when that gift's benefited you. It's done what it needs to do. And God comes and says, Tony, you know what? There's something else you need to have, so I'm going to take that back. Exactly. Exactly.
No.
It's like, well, Tony, I know you really love that gift, but there's something else that I need to give you to keep you growing. Otherwise, you're going to get stuck there.
Pry it from my fingers then.
I'm not going to do that, Tony. It's either your free will or you just stay there with that gift. But then you're going to be stuck and not grow. So what do you want, Tony? Do you want to grow? Thank you, Tony. Now, I'm going to give you another gift.
Is it candy?
This one is going to be different from the other one. This is going to challenge you. But it's what you need to continue to grow. And when I give it to you, you take a look at it, and you say, right, exactly. It's like you open your fingers up wide, and it just keeps slipping through. And God comes and says, Tony, you know I love you, and I want you to keep growing in freedom and love and wisdom. You need that in order to grow. So it's your choice. Anytime you would like to lower your get humble and pick that up, you can do whatever you would like to with that gift, Tony. Okay, so you're choosing. Now, here's the thing. Notice the clutching, right? Notice this movement, and it's falling through the fingers. Both of those responses are our human responses to whatever circumstances we're judging good or bad. When we come to this place of wisdom and freedom, this is what we do. Okay, now just hold your hands together. Yeah, so the stance becomes, God says, Tony, I've got this really hard thing, but I know you're ready. Here, have a dark night of the soul. And it's there. No clutching, no dropping, just God and you. God says, okay, come out of the dark night. Here is the fulfillment of your heart's desire. No. You're not illustrating exactly. That. We already did that. The idea is like like Mary, right? It comes, and it's not just what God does. It's not just the gifts that God gives us and how they challenge us or how we enjoy them. It's also what life brings. It's also what other humans bring. It's what the stock market up brings. Yay! It's what the stock market down brings. Boo! But it's all, notice the important part, it's not this thing which is moving. It's that stance. That's the quiet confidence of the people of God. Does it make sense? That's spiritual freedom. Thank you, Tony.
Can I have the pen?
It's an evangelical pen, so you've got
lots.
You've got lots of them. This is the stable. This is how. This is where we stand in the middle of all of these paradoxes. And then we're able to discern. We're able to make considered, reflective, prayerful responses in any given situation. Because we're not reacting, we're responding. Make sense? You know what? When we're able, and we'll never do it perfectly, but that's why I said, like, I always am kind of watching myself to notice when there's something like that. Oh, and it's like, okay, then I have to pray, and then I need to let go and come back to this. You know? What we need are people like this, because people, Christians, this is what Christians are to look like in the world. Oh my God, we have to live through another election year, dear Lord. Right? We do not have to be the ones going, woo, and ooh, depending on what the next news bulletin is. We stand and we watch it and we watch it and we talk to God and we discern. You know why? Because people like this never stop growing. People like this are humble about what they do know. And in awe of what they can never know. People like this are not easily defeated. People like this are not easily deceived. People like this are full of compassion. And for a change, they're fun to be with. Gail Boss is a writer, and she describes paradox this way. She says, you know what it is? It's to strip down. To let the bared soul recall what it knows beneath its fear of the dark. To know what Jesus called the one necessary thing, that there is one who is the source of all life, one who comes to be with us and in us, even especially in the darkness and death, one who brings from it all a new beginning, always at work to bring all things to a greater good.
So yes, mature faith includes an awful lot of unknowing. Mm-hmm. Of holding with open hands, of letting go. Is that all that there is? Of course not. That's why there's a paradox. For spiritual maturity also includes deep, deep knowing too. Of fewer things, perhaps, but of things that really matter. So we go back to the Gospel of Luke, which tells of Mary's unknowing, also points to knowing right off the bat. This is what Luke says to the person or persons he's writing this to. He said, I too decided to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus. Theophilus, by the way, means lover of God. It may have been just a particular person, or it may have been to anybody who's a lover of God, like us.
Yep.
So that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. So how does Theophilus, how do any of us know the certainty of anything? Well, contrary to what we may have been taught or have believed most of our lives, it's not simply by gathering facts.
Yep.
Facts aren't going to take us so far, but if we talked about, Joanne just mentioned politics. If there's anything you see in our politics these days, is that people can disagree vehemently on what the facts are.
Yes.
And how to interpret them.
Yep.
So let me give you a less controversial example. We know that we are stuck to the earth. When we go up, we always come down. Oh, there's another old song about that, too. What goes up? Anyway.
Oh, my God.
We call that force gravity. But scientists will tell you that gravity is actually a mystery. You can measure it. We can measure it on our bathroom scales. But they can't really fully explain it.
Mm-hmm.
What we know for certain is our experience of it. Now, I'm a bit of a klutz. I'm capable of tripping up or down anything. But when I trip, I always fall down, not up. Your experience is the same, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
None of us have ever seen anyone fall up into space. Except, of course, astronauts, where there is no zero gravity, which precisely proves the points. So when we talk about mature faith, we can talk about what we and others know from our experience with God. And we can help others interpret their experience with God. And that's one of the gifts of the Bible. That's why we gave away the Bibles this morning to the kids. It includes and interprets the testimony of people like Mary. That's why Luke tells her story to Theophilus and to us. And that's why her story resonates with us, because we have had different circumstances but similar experiences of learning to trust God, of learning to live life with open hands.
Yeah.
We can't prove our faith. We can't prove our experience by citing facts. People can disagree with our facts, but we know it to be true anyway. We live like it's true, particularly when we have a mature faith.
Mm-hmm.
The Apostle Paul, brilliant mind, had this powerful experience with God, and later said a couple times in the scriptures, I am persuaded. It's a beautiful phrase, being persuaded, because I am persuaded too.
Mm-hmm.
Not because somebody gave me a bunch of doctrine, not because somebody taught me a bunch of facts, but because I have known from my own experience, with my deepest, most personal knowing,
yep,
that this good news of Christmas, that this mystery of faith, is real and it's true.
Yeah. Amen. So that's what we're all invited to this morning. And what we'd like to invite you to as we begin to close our service is just a few moments to notice, to ponder like Mary, perhaps respond to your own invitations from the Holy Spirit. So I'm going to invite you, if you want to, if will you would just close your eyes for a moment. Just, it makes it easier to notice what's going on inside when you're not watching what's going on outside. Just close your eyes. And I'm going to invite you to clench your hands tightly. Keep them clenched. And just feel the tension. Feel that pressure. And as you're feeling that, just wonder with God, what in your life might you be clutching like that? Is there something, someone, some situation you clutch like that? And if something comes to mind or comes up in your heart, see, without judgment, don't judge it. It's not good. It's not bad. Just notice, why might you be clutching that thing, that bit of doctrine, that person, the situation, the job? What in you is causing you to clutch And notice that the longer you do that, the more uncomfortable it becomes, right? So maybe with a sense of, my gosh, I'm clutching to my job because I'm afraid that God won't take care of me. Whatever it might be, now, loosen your grip. Feel the release. Relax your hands gently. And just wonder with God, what it might it be like for you to loosen your grip on that thing, on that person? What might it be like for you to do that? And if you would like to begin, again, it's not perfect, but to begin to loosen your grip, just maybe take a few more moments. Tell God what you want. Tell God what you need. And ask God to be for you what you've thought that thing or person could be. Okay, and let's do this one more time, but let's do it from the other side, the opposite side of the spectrum. Open your hands really wide with your fingers open and just hold them. Just hold them like that. And again, there's a pressure and there's a tension in that. As you do that, are you noticing anything that may have slipped through your fingers? Some gift, maybe some challenge. And we're not talking about something that needed to be let go of, because there are things that we need to let go of and release. No. Something or someone you pushed aside, or perhaps because you were afraid, something from God you couldn't understand, or you were angry and you refused to receive it. Without judgment, what are you noticing? Anything in your life like that? If so, the gift's still there. It's always still there. What do you need? What do you want that only God can give you? And do you want to receive that challenge? If so, go ahead, release your hands and bring them right back. Just gently cup them together. What might it be like for you to trust that God can give you what you really need, no matter how it feels, whether you understand it or not? And if you want to, just go ahead and silently ask God for that challenge. Ask God for that gift. And ask God for the grace to learn what it is that He's wanting you to learn so you can grow in love and freedom. And of course, prayers like this are not just once and done. I'd ask for you to continue. And as we leave, and you can open your eyes now, that this is the stance that we'll take. This is the stance in which we'll live and be free and stable and open and discerning and wise. And as we close our service, we can release our hands, but allow this to become your way of being in the world with God and with others. Amen? We're going to sing. hopefully a little better than last week. Two verses of a carol we probably all do know, and I think it only has one version.
One tune.
There were three different versions going on last week. From O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. But we're going to do verses 6 and 7 because they really apply and will help us to close out our service this morning. So
let's stand together as we do this,
stand.
If you would.
O come, thou wisdom from on high, and order all things far and nigh. To us the path of knowledge show, and cause us in her ways to go. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel. O come, desire of nations, bind in one the hearts of all humankind. Bid thou our sad division cease, and be thyself our King of peace. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
And indeed he will.
And has.